Okay, very good. So, shall we start again? Yes. Great. Okay, so somebody asked a question yesterday about which sutta it was that where the Buddha says that the monk is nodding in the forest. Remember that? Yeah. And I forgot about that, of course. But somebody else. What is your name? No, it's okay. She doesn't want to know her name. Not important. It is found in the Anguttara Nikaya 6:42. So if you go to the Anguttara Nikaya 6:42, you find it in there. And it is actually in other suttas as well, but that is one of the places where it is to be found. 6:42. Oh, okay, I see what I'm doing. I'm doing the wrong thing here. That's why I'm not coming to the wrong place. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so that is a good place. So let us get back to the sutta on delusion, on avidya again. And we have now just seen how the various factors fill up the factors that come after it, right? One factor filling up another one, and then all the way to filling up delusion. And the root cause of filling up delusion is that you are associating with the wrong kind of people. If you don't associate with the right kind of people, then that eventually fills up delusion itself. It's interesting, isn't it? How it's not obvious why that should be the case, but this is what the sutta essentially comes down to. And it sort of makes sense when you see all the links coming together. You can see how this process actually must happen in this way. And then there comes this very nice simile, which comes up next. One of the great things and beautiful things about the suttas are all the beautiful similes that really drive the point home in such often very powerful and very vivid ways. And you can kind of feel, get a more emotional, if you like, involvement in the sutta when you see the similes, because they have a kind of more emotional drawing power. It's not just pure intellectual anymore. And this is this simile. Just as when it is raining and the rain pours down in thick droplets on a mountaintop, the water flows down along the slope and fills the clefts, the gullies, and the creeks. These becoming full fill up the pools. These becoming full fill up the lakes. These becoming full fill up the streams. These becoming full fill up the rivers. And these becoming full fill up the great ocean. Yeah, so this idea that if it keeps on raining, right, on that rain mountaintop, and the rain just keeps on going and going and going, and gradually it moves from one kind of entity first to the little creeks, and the little creeks get filled up, then to the small lakes get filled up. And if it just keeps on raining on the mountaintop, that fills up the large lakes, fills up the rivers, and eventually fills up the ocean itself. And the only thing that is important here for the filling up of the ocean is that it keeps on raining on that mountaintop, right? It takes a long time. It takes a while for that to happen. But if the rain keeps on coming down on the mountaintop, eventually the great ocean itself will be filled up. Yeah, that's what it's saying. And of course, the point here is that precisely the same thing with the sequence of things. If you keep on studying the suttas, if you keep on seeing the superior people, if you keep on hearing the true teachings, then eventually awakening must happen as a consequence. Because you're filling up one step, filling up the next one. So keep that rain coming right on the mountaintop. Keep on reading those suttas. Keep on being inspired by good teachings. And as you do that, awakening will happen as a matter of course. It's easy, right? It's so easy. All you have to do is listen to nice Dhamma talks, right? And then whole thing just happens as a matter of course if you do that. Yeah, because you naturally feel you want to practice these teachings, and naturally you want to do what is right. Naturally you want to be kind, because you understand the power of these things. You understand where real happiness lies in the world. You understand where suffering is. And because you understand this, you're guided in the right direction. You're gradually being brainwashed by this beautiful brainwashing, which leaves you happy at the end of the path. Just like clean clothes make you more happy than dirty ones, in the same way, you get brainwashed in a nice way, and it leaves you happy after a while. Yeah, so this is why I was saying so much before about this idea of allowing ourselves to be inspired by the right kind of people, listening to good Dhamma teachings, especially when you feel like, you know, you don't really have that oomph anymore in your practice. Go back and allow yourself to be inspired, to understand what is really important in life. It's so easy to be lost in the world. It's so easy when we are around people who have no interest in spiritual things to be drawn away from that. And we need this continuous reminder, so we are dragged back into those things that really matter. And this is one of the great things about being a monastic. When you are a monastic, you are often surrounded by great teachers who kind of point to in the right way. You're surrounded by other people who are also practicing the path to the best of their ability, right? You tend to talk more about spiritual things, less about worldly things, right? So monastic life has this, it's almost this ideal place where you kind of always are reminded in a sense of what you're supposed to be doing, right? And then you kind of feel your head, okay, oh, I'm monastic, okay, I shouldn't be thinking that kind of thought, right? This is what Ajahn Chah said. If you ever kind of go the wrong way, just feel your head. Okay, and it kind of reminds you what kind of person you are here. So you're doing the right thing here. So this is the great thing about one of the great things about monastic life. There are many other things as well. This is one of the powerful things about it, and that makes it so strong. It's much easier to practice in the right way here. So this is this beautiful simile about the rain on the mountaintop, and it really makes it very clear what is going on here. But of course, what we have seen now is the negative side of things, how the negative things lead to more negative things. Now we want to see also the positive side of things. Before we do that, just read the very last part of the paragraph. So just as the rain pouring down fills up the great ocean, so too, not associating with good person, becoming full, fills up, not hearing the good Dhamma, etc., etc. And eventually the five hindrances, becoming full, fill up delusion, avidya. Thus there is a nutriment for delusion, for avidya. In this way it becomes full. And now we come to the positive side. And the positive side is, of course, is more inspiring than the negative side. I say, because that true knowledge and liberation have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment of true knowledge and liberation? It should be said, the seven factors of awakening. Yeah, true knowledge and liberation. True knowledge is vidya, the exact opposite of avidya. And vidya in Buddhism usually refers to three things. It refers to seeing your past lives, right? It's one of the factors of true knowledge. The other one is understanding karma, how beings fare on according to karma. And of course, finally, the insight into the Four Noble Truths that leads to awakening, arahantship itself. That is true knowledge. Basically means seeing things as they really are. That's what it comes down to. And it's terrible if you don't see things as they clearly are. It means you're walking around, at least to some extent, in delusion. And liberation is, of course, it is about liberation from suffering, first of all, being free from suffering. Yeah, and this is much more profound than people usually realize, the idea of freedom from suffering, because we don't really understand suffering. We cannot really understand freedom from suffering either. But let's just leave that aside for now, because it gets a little bit far astray by looking at that. And liberation also means, it's the liberation of the mind, the freedom from the defilements of the mind. When the mind is defiled, you feel like you are constrained, you feel the mind is kind of being it feels unfree. You are like a slave to the defilements. The defilements are in charge. Once the defilements die away, that is when you feel free for the first time. You feel you can make the right choices. You can think clearly about things. You feel that you can actually guide yourself in the right direction. When the defilements are in charge, you are a slave. The slave is whipping you, saying, do this, do that. And you haven't really got that choice, that ability to choose wisely because of the defilements. So real freedom in Buddhism is a freedom from defilements. And you can know that yourself, that sometimes you feel more free than other times. And usually it has to do with these defilements of the mind, the five hindrances. So all the good things in life, right? Feeling free, feeling rid of suffering, seeing things according to reality, being wise. All of these good, great, wonderful, marvelous things that are at the end of the Buddhist path, where do they come from? What is the nutriment? The seven factors of awakening. And I was explaining the seven factors of awakening in quite a bit of detail the other day. And the most important thing to remember about them for the purposes of what we are doing now, it is all about meditation practice and all about samadhi, the stillness of the mind, right? The power of the mind that comes from practicing meditation in the right way. That power, that stillness, those jhanas, that samadhi, that is what enables us to penetrate the truth in this way and gain all the greatest benefits that are available on the Buddhist path. True knowledge and liberation is the highest thing that we can gain, and the cause for that highest gain is samadhi itself, the bodhisattvas, including, of course, all the four jhanas and everything that leads in that direction. Yeah, another reminder of the importance of samadhi on the Buddhist path, as if there wasn't enough reminder already. It's everywhere in the suttas. It is so fundamental to the whole practice of the Buddhist teachings. Okay, so that is the samadhi and the liberation on the path. What is the cause? What is the nutriment for the seven factors of awakening? And it says it should be said, the four foundations, I think it has here, the four establishments, the four applications, the four focuses of mindfulness, in other words, the four satipatthanas, is the cause for the nutriment for the seven factors of awakening here. And I showed you a little bit the other day about why that is the case, because at the beginning of the seven factors of awakening, we have the sati sambojanga, which is the factor of awakening of mindfulness. That's at the very beginning. So that is where kind of the bojangas arise from. They arise from the mindfulness factor here. Right, one of the ways of looking at the four applications of mindfulness is to think of them simply as mindfulness of breathing. That's really all it is. And of course, we know that if we practice mindfulness of breathing in the right way, it leads to samadhi, right? You become more and more still, more and more peaceful, until eventually you enter a very profound state of mind. And this is where samadhi is all about. If you read the Anapanasati Sutta, this is what it explains to you. You start watching the long breath, or the short breath, and it goes through many, many stages until eventually you get to what is called the Vimochayang Chitta. Vimochayang means the liberation of the mind. And liberation of the mind in the suttas is about jhanas and samadhi. And then comes the insight afterwards. Right? You see how all the suttas, they're basically saying the same thing from slightly different angles and slightly different ways. The more you know about the suttas, the more you can see it's all the same again and again. Different angles, different ways of saying it. And after a while, you start to get this, and then when you get it, you know, it becomes quite simple after all. All of these four volumes, or 25 volumes, whatever it is, of suttas, they collapse into a fairly simple message of what you have to do on the Buddhist path. So satipatthana then, what you do in satipatthana practice when you watch the breath is that you abandon the very last remnants of the defilements of the mind. The slight little restlessness in the mind, the slight little sloth and torpor that might be there, that is abandoned as you watch the breath. The idea here is that when you watch the breath, you are not allowing yourself to feed those things that are the nutriments for the defilements. desire needs a nutriment. The nutriment for desire is seeing the pleasurable things in the world, right? Think, oh, this would be such a wonderful thing to have that. Then desire arises. While you are watching the breath, you're no longer feeding that desire because you're no longer thinking about the beautiful things in the world, how wonderful they are. Because you're not doing that, desire can die down completely as you watch the breath. Same thing with ill will. Ill will needs to be fed, right? You need to think, oh, that terrible person, right? If you stop thinking like that, then gradually, ill will disappear completely here. And this is what happens as you watch the breath and you do Satipatthana practice. You overcome the last remnants of defilements in the mind. Then the samadhi can happen. So Satipatthana is always, in the suttas, always the cause, the condition for samadhi, for the bhujangas, and for all other ways of describing samadhi in the suttas. So this is the that path, and then from here on, it is exactly the same sequence as we saw before. What you can see here as well, if you compare this with the previous sutta, you will see that the four establishings of mindfulness and the seven factors of awakening, they are in the same place of the sequence as the five hindrances were before, right? So these are the opposite, if you like, of the five hindrances. It shows you that when you practice Satipatthana, when you do the seven factors of awakening, you're doing the opposite of the five hindrances. You are abandoning them, giving them up. This is one way of seeing that. So what is the nutriment of the four Satipatthanas? And it says here the three kinds of good conduct. Right? So this is the opposite of before. Before we had the three kinds of bad conduct. So by practicing in the right way, by just living a virtuous and good life, you are creating the nutriment, the causes, the conditions for mindfulness, for Satipatthana, for meditation to be possible. It is only really possible when you have that basis in good conduct, the three kinds of good conduct, body, speech, and also the good conduct of the mind itself. Right, that's good news, isn't it? Whenever you keep your five precepts, whenever you are kind and generous and you do the right thing, you are supporting the Satipatthana practice, supporting your meditation practice just by doing that. And then you start to understand, well, if I do only that much, then it's great already. But maybe I should do a bit more to give even more support to my meditation practice. And this is where what I was saying just before about the idea of also purifying your mind by reflecting wisely also becomes a very important part of the thing we call sila, the kind of good conduct. And when we do that, when we start to reflect wisely and start to purify the mind in that way, we have more metta, compassion, then we are creating the foundation for meditation practice, the foundation for being able to watch the breath. That's basically what it's saying here. Satipatthana can be summarized in what just watching the breath. Then, when we have the three kinds of good conduct, the cause for that is restraint of the sense faculties. Right? This is what I was saying before, when the sense faculties have a certain restraint through wisdom, not restraint through willpower or force, then the mind tends to be much more even during the day. It still is a little bit of up and down in the mind, very hard to avoid that completely, but you don't have these enormous kind of, you know, fluctuations in your mind state. It's more even. You're not being pulled around so much by desire and aversion. And that, of course, when the mind is more even, that is where sila becomes possible, because otherwise, if your mind is kind of being dragged around by these defilements, then of course sila itself is lacking at that particular point. It's the deep sila of the mind itself. So the cause for this is mindfulness and clear comprehension. You need to be mindful to see what is happening in your mind. If you're going to be wise about how to deal with the mind, looking in the right place, thinking about things in the right way, reflecting carefully, you have to have mindfulness to be able to see what is going on. Without that mindfulness, you have no possibility of being the master of your own mind, being in charge of yourself. And that is the problem. Clear comprehension goes together with the mindfulness, so that you know whether this is suitable or not, what you're doing at this moment. Yeah? So you can see how these things fit together very nicely. It may not be obvious when you read this on your own, but once you kind of get your head around this, you see how these things work out very, very nicely in many ways. And the cause for mindfulness and full awareness is then again the yoniso manasikara, careful attention or wise attention. You attend in such a way that the good qualities in you increase and the bad qualities go down, right? It's the wise attention again. And then the wise attention comes from faith, the faith, the confidence in the Buddha's teachings that you acquire by reading the suttas and listening to nice Dhamma talks and all of these kind of things, that faith start to arise. You start to realize that this is all for your happiness and for your benefit, and you're doing things in the right way. The faith can, in turn, comes from hearing the good Dhamma. Hearing the good Dhamma comes from associating with good people. Yeah, with the superior people. Thus, associating with good person, becoming full, fills up hearing the good Dhamma. Hearing the good Dhamma fills up confidence or faith, right? So you need to fill these things up. You need to hear, hang around the good people again and again and again. Hear the good Dhamma again and again and again. And as you do that, you're filling up each stage on this path. The faith becomes full. When faith becomes full, because you have faith in the suttas, the word of the Buddha, you start attending wisely because you understand how important it is. You understand every time you attend unwisely to something, you are letting yourself down. You're causing suffering for yourself. You're treating yourself as your own enemy. Why on earth would you want to treat yourself as an enemy? You want to treat yourself as a friend, right? You want to be kind to yourself. You want to look after yourself and care for yourself. And that is what you understand when you practice these things properly. That is what you actually do. You don't allow yourself to be kind of hijacked by the negative states of mind. You remember what is really important in life. You have faith and confidence in these teachings. So the careful attention arises as a consequence. Then when you have careful attention, because you do those things that you should do, you attend in the right way, mindfulness arises. Mindfulness comes into this because you know that you have to be careful. I have to be careful. I have to watch out. Okay, that is part of what mindfulness is about, this knowledge that you have to be careful. Because then you will be on the lookout. You have the appamada, the heedfulness as to what you're doing here. And the clear comprehension, again, comes from the suttas, right? Certain things have the right purpose, certain things are not. Then the sense restraint comes. Restraint of the senses becoming full fills up the three kinds of good conduct. The three kinds of good conduct becoming full fill up the four establishments of mindfulness. The four establishments or applications of mindfulness fill up the seven factors of awakening. And the seven factors of awakening becoming full fill up the knowledge and liberation. Thus there is nutriment for true knowledge and liberation. In this way they become full. Yeah, so again, start with the basic things, and gradually, everything fills up as a consequence. And eventually, awakening, true knowledge and liberation happens as a consequence. Just as when it is raining and the rain pours down in thick droplets on the mountaintop, the water flows down along the slope and fills the clefts, the gullies, and the creeks. These becoming full fill up the pools. These becoming full fill up the lakes. These becoming full fill up the streams. These becoming full fill up the rivers. And these becoming full fill up the great ocean. Thus there is nutriment for the great ocean, and in this way it becomes full. So too, associating with good persons becoming full fills up hearing the good Dhamma. The seven factors of enlightenment becoming full fill up true knowledge and liberation. Yeah, so again, the same basic idea of allowing the rain to keep on pouring on the top of the mountain. And as the rain pours, as you get inspired, as you know what you have to do, these things tend to happen almost automatically by itself. And this, of course, also relates very clearly in with the Noble Eightfold Path, because remember, the Noble Eightfold Path itself starts with a right view, right? The beginning is always right view, and from that idea of right view, then comes Samma Sankappa, often translated as right intention. I like to translate it as a right aim and right purpose, because when you have the right view, you start aiming in the right direction. Your purpose becomes right. When you see things according to reality, you start to walk that path that accords with reality. And because of that, your aim becomes right. And of course, the right view is a bit like this. Where does that right view come from? Well, originally, it comes from the superior people and reading the Dhamma. You see things in the right way. You start to understand your priorities, what really matters in the world, what actually leads to long-term benefit and happiness, rather than the kind of short-term benefit and happiness. And it isn't that much happiness anyway, that kind of the vast majority of people are looking for. Yeah, once you start to understand, once you have some feeling of the idea of rebirth and these kind of things, it changes your perspective on life. You get a much broader perspective. You start to understand the big picture of things, rather than focusing down on this very tiny, narrow picture, which is this particular life. Things start to move out. This is part of the idea of right view. This is part of the idea of hearing the true Dhamma, part of the idea of hanging out with the superior people, right? It leads to all of these consequences. Noble Eightfold Path is very similar to this. If you know how it works, it is one step after the other one. Right view leading to right aim, right intention. Once you have the right aim and intention, it moves on to the virtue, to being kind, doing all the right things, and it moves up all the way, just like we are seeing here, eventually leading on to final awakening, true knowledge and liberation, as it says here. So, thus there is nutriment for true knowledge and liberation, and in this way it becomes full. Now you know a little bit about why it is so important to read the suttas and to hear inspiring Dhamma talks and keep yourself kind of on the right track in this way. Why these things matter so much? Because it conditions you. It enables you to do this practice. So easy to get sidetracked, but this actually pushes you in the right direction, keeps you on the straight and narrow, makes sure that you're kind of heading in the right way. This is what this is all. This is all about. And we're going to have a little bit of a look later on today on the gradual training. We will start looking at that. And a lot about this is to feel that when you read the suttas, to have a sense that now you're actually getting teachings by the Buddha, right? You are in the presence of the Buddha in many ways when you're reading the suttas. This is what is so powerful about this, because then you are combining the hearing of the true Dhamma with also with feeling the presence of the superior people, and especially the Buddha himself. So part of the trick is to read the suttas and get this feeling, now the Buddha is talking to me here. The Buddha is speaking to me here. The Buddha knew that there will be people down the track 2,500 years from now still listening to these teachings. So he made it available to us in this way. And this is part of the trick of making this work. There's many different little things you can do, but I will talk more about that after the break. I don't think I want to move on to the next sutta, because I think we're getting probably a little bit too far ahead of ourselves. So I will actually stop there, a little bit of a short session, but I will stop there, and then we'll continue again after the meal at 2 o'clock. Okay, very good.